Many leaders of influence, sometimes even Christian ones, have stepped down because of inappropriate relationships. What causes this, and what can we do to be led not into temptation? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Eric Geiger, G-E-I-G-E-R. His website is ericgeiger.com. He's a senior vice president at Lifeway Christian Resources. And he's also an author of a book called How to Ruin Your Life and Starting Over When You Do. Eric, thank you so much for joining us on Vocal Point. I appreciate it.
I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
Sure. Okay, so tell us about this phenomenon, which obviously has really heated up ever since the exposure of Harvey Weinstein.
Right, so it's really sad. It's disturbing. You've seen leaders from a plethora of walks of life and varying disciplines and absolutely ruin their lives and fall morally. Some, it's abuse, and obviously I would put that in a completely different category than a leader having an affair, because, you know, abuse is non-consensual, and an affair would be consensual. So I don't want to treat those two the same, but in circles that I'm in, we're seeing a lot of leaders fall, many to sexual affairs with people and other sins in their lives that are bringing about their destruction. It's not a new phenomenon. We've seen ministry leaders and marketplace leaders fall for centuries. We can look back even into the scripture and see the story of a king, a famous king who was even called a man after God's own heart, and he fell into sexual sin and had the husband murdered of the wife that he slept with. And so that's King David, and the story's found in 2 Samuel 11. So there's nothing new under the sun, and there's nothing new under the sun even in terms of how we ruin our lives and how we destroy those around us.
Explain the title. I mean, I think it stands on its own, but nobody sets out to ruin their lives. Nobody says, oh, you know, I think I'm going to go ahead and then build this great work and then undo it, you know, undermine the whole thing for a few minutes of pleasure.
Right. Yeah, no one wakes up in the morning and says, I want to start the path to ruin my life. You look at a tall building that looks really strong from the outside, and then all of a sudden, in a matter of seconds, the building can implode. Mm-hmm. And buildings can be taken down either from the inside or from the outside. There's buildings that are taken down with large cranes and wrecking balls that pummel the building from the outside, or there can be an implosion where mm-hmm. demolition experts set explosive devices at critical structures, and then the foundation weakens and the building topples. And that's what often happens in the lives of those who fall. We allow explosives to be placed in our lives, and everything looks good on the outside. But as the foundation of our character is weakened, we set ourselves up for a fall. And if the pressure of our jobs, if the pressure of just living in this world exceeds our integrity, if that pressure is greater than our character, we are going to implode. We're going to fall. And that's what happens far too often.
Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Any comments on that from the Lord's Prayer?
We need it daily. We need it daily because the temptation for our heart to wander from the Lord, it can feel very subtle at first. It can be a small wandering, but that always escalates. And so daily. Daily we need, Lord, please lead us away from the things that will kill us and lead us to walk more closely with you.
I understand that three things are often a cause for people to have an inappropriate relationship, to commit adultery. They would include boredom, isolation, and pride. Why don't we deal with these one at a time?
Yeah, and those three really come from the story of David's fall, and this would be even things outside of adultery, anything that would ruin someone's life. But adultery is clearly one of those things, and even the central sin in David's story. So first, isolation. David, in 2 Samuel 11, he sent people away from him who would have stopped him in his foolishness. So it's spring, kings go off to war. David sends Joab and all of his officials away to go fight a war, and David remains in Jerusalem. So he was surrounded by people, but not the people who were holding him accountable, not the people who would have stopped him. He had people around him who went and fetched a married woman for him and brought her to his palace. And so if we are surrounded by people who are impressed with us, by people who aren't willing to ask us the hard questions, people who aren't caring for our soul, then we're going to set ourselves up for a fall. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that sin demands to have a man by himself. So sin wants me alone. Sin wants you alone. And so that's isolation. The second would be boredom. We see in the story of David's implosion that he walks around on the roof of the palace. He tried to go to sleep. He gets up in the middle of the night. He walks around. He's looking for something. He's restless. He's bored. This is the same David that years earlier would pray these incredible psalms while living in a cave. He prays in Psalm 57, God, you're my refuge. You're where I run. I wake up the dawn with singing because of your great love, your faithful love. And so David in Psalm 57 is in awe of the grace of God, the love of God, but not the night on the roof. The night on the roof, he's not looking to the Lord. He's looking for something else because he's bored. And a way to see if you're bored is if you're looking for something else, because if you're bored, it means you're not looking at the Lord, because the Lord is never boring. He's always quenching and always satisfying. And so when you're bored, you'll look for something, anything, and the thing that you're looking for is always less than the Lord, and it can ultimately lead to your destruction. And then the third thing we see in that story is pride. David finds out that this woman, Bathsheba, is married, and he says, go get her anyway. Go get her. I'm the king. Anything I want, I get. David had lost his sense of appreciation that everything he had was from the Lord. He felt entitled to things. I'm the king. Anything I ask for, I should receive. Look at all I've done. And anytime that pride takes root in our lives, it always expresses itself in us feeling we're owed something, and it always leads to our destruction.
Yeah, and then pride would also, I guess, include the idea that, well, you know, I'm above this sin, I'm above this temptation, I'm not going to fall, so, you know, go ahead and tempt me or whatever. I don't know if you ever read or have ever read St. Augustine's Confessions. It's fascinating.
Yes, I have.
Okay, good. I don't know if you remember this, but there was a fellow in there who had become a Christian, but then he allowed himself to be dragged into some of the gladiatorial contests.
Yeah. Ellipsis.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very instructive, because he was like, oh, even though you drag me in there, I'm going to have my eyes closed. It's not going to affect me at all. But then when the crowd was there roaring, the curiosity got the better of him. He opened his eyes, and then he became an aficionado, a fan of those contests, and it wounded his soul, you know, until God dealt with him later. Yeah, tell about that.
Yeah, even dragged people with him. So the guy who says, I'll never go, starts dragging people with him to the games.
It's very instructive, though, on temptation, and basically it's this pride point. You're saying, don't think you're above temptation. If you think you're going to stand and you won't fall, then that proves that you might indeed fall.
Yep, and so a good check for our hearts as we're watching all of these stories come in of ministry leaders and leaders in the marketplace fall is if we look at those stories and we think, that's never going to happen to me, I'm never going to fall, we need to be very, very careful.
Mm.
Because if anyone thinks he's standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. When we see people around us fall, it should cause us not to think we're strong, but should remind us of our fragility.
Yeah.
That we can't stand in our own strength, but we can look to the only one who can keep us from falling,
and that is
the Lord. So, for sure, watching all of the destruction around us should not cause us to think. It must not cause us to think that we are above those things.
Now, when you mentioned isolation, you were talking basically about the idea of accountability, that Joab would hold David accountable. And this is so ironic because Joab overall, I mean, you read Samuel and so forth, and you realize, you know, David, by the end, he does not like Joab. And Joab did certain things that were very bad, and yet God used Joab in David's life to hold him accountable. So that's interesting. Comment on accountability.
Yeah, for sure, Joab's not this model believer, but you see multiple times him holding David accountable. One of the more famous ones is when David wants to do a census to show how powerful his army is, and Joab knows this is detestable before the Lord. He tells David this is a detestable thing, and he doesn't even carry out all of David's command and doesn't count all of the 12 tribes. So Joab was willing to speak truth to power. He was willing to talk to his boss about this not being right. And that took a lot of courage from Joab. It's very easy for us, the longer we live, the more successful we become, for us to feel as if we only want to surround ourselves with people who will tell us what we want to hear. And isolation, it's a big pull on our hearts. We prefer comfort, and it's spiritual growth. Sanctification is never comfortable. So because we prefer comfort, we're not going to want to surround ourselves with people who are going to chip away at the parts of us that need to be chipped away at.
Yeah.
So that's why we seem to long for isolation.
You know, it's interesting though too that obviously powerful men are particularly vulnerable, and I do say men because most of the time, you know, with the Me Too, the 99% of whatever involves women complaining about men acting badly. So I'm honing in though not on the word men so much as powerful. Because of this, you know, phenomenon that you're saying, you know, they just basically, some people want to surround themselves with yes men so that, you know, nobody will challenge them. And then that becomes their Achilles heel, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And again, I want to make a distinction between, you know, someone having an affair and then abuse. I mean, that's another level of your heart being hardened and desensitized, and it's beyond sex. It's when you move to abuse, you're using power to control people and demoralize people and bring great harm and hurt on people. And so it's not only an issue of lust at that point, it's an issue of just deep-seated control and power and dehumanizing people. So when someone moves from a situation of sexual affairs and they move into abuse or sexual abuse, it's their heart has really has moved far into depravity and sin and wickedness that is completely encompassing them.
Say more about accountability. We have less than a minute to go, but I think accountability can be one of the key solutions to all this.
Bonhoeffer's sin demands to have a man by himself is a statement that haunts me, because we live in a culture that's easier and easier to be alone, to be isolated. There was a social psychologist years ago that wrote a book called Bowling Alone. He observed that bowling wasn't going down, but bowling leagues were going down, that basically people were starting to bowl alone. Oof. And that it would cause society to crumble, because isolation causes people to make foolish decisions. So the antidote for isolation is community. It's to find people that will encourage you and shepherd your heart and care for you. The scripture says, encourage one another as long as it is called today, so that none of you is hardened by sin's deception. So the way for your heart to not get hardened, the way for your heart to not get desensitized towards sin, is to have people around you that will encourage you and challenge you. And so,
okay, we're basically out of time. Eric, thank you so much. Eric Geiger, GEIGER.com. Again, the book, How to Ruin Your Life and Starting Over When You Do. Thank you, Eric. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Sure, bye-bye.